Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effects. Just when you think you've surpassed all beings before us, because our minds, our brains have continued to grow over the millennium to a point where today, you know, I'm supposed to know everything and have an opinion on anything. And it's going to be, in case I was mistaken, contrasted to a so-called expert, somebody that's picked up that penchant for esoteria, for trivia, to make the point, I'm not so smart. I think we still achieve, as we always have. I think the show is going to underline that today. Look at the commentary, the imagination of a Mason. Oh, yes. The idea that we have conquered all ignorance is an interesting myth. It's like some of the myths that follow us through our excursion into Freemasonry and beyond. It's the difference between talking about us being a person of religion or having a religion and actually being able to explain what in the hell that is. I'm a golfer right now. I'm a tennis player. I'm a deep sea fisherman. You buying any of that? So what I say needs a bit of reality. Why would I confuse you or mislead you? Well, I guess some sense of self-aggrandizement, some of that competition to be somebody, to accumulate enough experience that somehow I have this meager sense of superiority, or I can at least sleep at night thinking that I have some value. Doesn't matter whether it's fiction or not, just to be able to cover up my anxieties because I'm an illusion. No, it's interesting to hear that when Freemasonry knocks on the door. Here, let me give you, this is just a charming and enduring, and I think it helps explains why we are in the dilemma that we're in. You know, jazz hands. You know, when you walk near a Grand Lodge these days, it's jazz hands. Oh my goodness, there's no more smugness. We've got this. No. It's we're now talking about messaging. Yeah, we've got the chops. But the messaging isn't getting out there. And oh my, what do we do? If we're looking literally at where we came from, we'll sit this one out. We'll pass. We don't have the hand we want to play right now. This isn't the move that I want. I'm seeing my opponent making a move, but I know he's trying to draw me into within three moves, he's trying to draw me into checkmate. It's not going to happen. So I'll surrender a piece. Even if it's a bishop, I'll surrender. Here we have this perennial collision of reality and illusion, and just lovely. This desire by some to understand what's really going on around them, because it matters. Now, where we get really silly is when we try to impose that kind of notion on other people. Politics being what it is, the epitome of silly, we don't have much, it's so seriously silly, we don't have much in the way of alternative. And my goodness, the cynicism of organization, of bureaucracy, would never allow us to be considering the development of intellect or the individual mind. My goodness, that's how do you control it? The hidden agenda of assimilation, of control, it dissolves when you start to do that. And yet, we sit back and revere the places in the earth that have been able to do that. Even in our ignorance about the East, we know when we're talking with China as a nation, we're the infant. They've been around 5,000 years. 5,000 years, not just breathing, but been around. Significant. They've invented most of the things that we think we're inventing today. And yet here we are, that upstart, trying to tell them how to go about their business. Interesting, eh? And what do they often do? They nod, not going to happen. We have those influences, and along comes this inquiry, and I think it's quite frankly it is still a matter of discovery and ability. And while here in North America we've shied away from educating ourselves, education. In terms of the grand tours, we found that we are having a hard time moving forward until we get into those tours, until we understand what in the world is going on around us, how we fit in. We're beginning quite quickly. The acceleration has started. We're looking at those broader context. And the door was forced open by COVID-19, as if we needed that memory. You listen to the old soldiers, and that's what they were saying. They're not out there puffing their chests out and making threats and all that sort of ridiculous. They're the people that teach us about the horror and the need to avoid it and the concern about us forgetting the lessons that they brought back. COVID forced that door wide open. Context. Now, not a day goes by where we're not made aware of a connection between some ground zero in the East or in the Middle East. And its connection with an airport or through a thread of travelers from Britain or Brazil. Do we throw our hands up yet and say, oh, no, I don't want that. Let's build up those. Let's get that wall going. Let's build up bigger walls around us. Yeah, how's that been working? No, it's not. We are this global community, and I think it's a concept that's been there for a long time, but now it's gaining widespread appreciation. We're going to it'll come back to that theme. I've got a poem by, it's a bit of a departure. It's by Emily Bronte. We don't usually dip into the Brontes, you know, those, as Hughes called them, those three weird sisters, but we are today. But think about this theme that we're going to circle back on. The value here that you and I have stumbled across by some, I don't mean those, you know, put all the pettiness aside and all the poorly thought out measures, put them aside and think about the values, the presence of mind that masonry requires, it still requires. And then think about where it's brought us to today. Not in lockstep. My goodness, that uniformity. This isn't a production line. This isn't Henry Ford's idea of an ideal world. No. This is a real world. We test and then we have the ability to step back and evaluate. And we often see the experiments have been done without, I always think it's easy, just do the impact analysis before you depart, or think about worst case scenarios and situations and prepare for them. But a lot of the ideas are lobbed into our midst without any of that. Where I am in Canada, we're learning that lesson daily. We've got politics that just is guesswork, throwing darts at a board, and it's not a good darts player, I can tell you. Here, think about this. Think about the appeal, not the certainty. The disappointment and the pouty lips heading out the door. I don't think it's necessarily because of a fault with the logic of masonry. I think it's more the embarrassment, the way we embarrass ourselves with the product and the comments and the pettiness that we put forward. It's embarrassing because the lack of scholarship is pushed aside. And so think of this idea that masonry isn't the guaranteed solution. You join, there isn't a guarantee that you're going to develop insight. Come on. Or that you're going to challenge and weigh and be able to answer the question. If you claim that you're a man of God, tell us what you mean. And is it a feeling or is it some conclusion that you've drawn through good deeds? Well, then we would wonder your motives. Were you doing them because it makes you feel good or because you're the ultimate question of altruism? Is there any true altruist? Do you do things for other people? Well, along comes this group, and it has ships at the docks setting off regularly, and nobody's really quite sure who's funding it. But the ships put out a call in the local press. If you are interested in adventure, if you are interested in exploration, be at the dock at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to select a crew and we're going to head off. And as soon as that boat is filled, if we get a lot of good crew, we'll set off another boat and another, because there's a big world out there. And the mission of this journey is exploration. Oh, are we going to be rich? The mission is exploration. We're going to see what's over that horizon. Well, I already know what's over that horizon. That's the whale that's going to swallow my ship. That's the Kraken. There's peril everywhere. And there's a likelihood that we're going to sail off the edge into the oblivion. Only a fool would take that journey. And yet the scientists say, well, if you look, do you notice that arc? You know, yes, you're absolutely right. Why, if you get as old as I am, you realize, why would you argue with a fool? Why? Yeah, I get to say that out loud because it's the truth. I don't argue with the truth, with the fool. The flat earth, absolutely. We don't need you on board because you're just going to be fretting and whining and complaining. You don't need you. Stay there. Good luck. Good luck to you. You know, the surge of people coming to the dock is enormous. I want to go on adventure. You know, I can feel emboldened. It will defy me. And then when you smell the air and you hear the roar of the ocean, or if you're there during the storm, you witness this power, this potential for destruction. And it's like, my God, man, why would anybody do that? Are you out of your flipping mind? Better I stay here and rethink this. Do you mind? Oh, no. No, you just step aside here, leave the way for others, but step aside. And when you get to the point of committing, it's going to be a journey. How long is it going to be? Well, it could be years. It could be a lifetime. Ah, but what about all the things I've left behind? Well, yeah, there is that. And you do have to weigh the potential for what you discover. And will I be a rich man? Well, I guess it depends on how you define wealth. If you're thinking in material terms, I think I would be sitting down on the dock and waiting and thinking that through. Okay? You move over to that group over there. You just sit down and think it through. Well, a few hundred years down the road, the dock has become crowded. Lots of ships with small crews have taken off over the horizon, and some have returned and some are still out there. The journey is to explore the great unknown, to go into the darkness and see what's there. Or it's a confrontation of our superstition. And we can find, being intelligent people, we can find no end of rationalizations to keep us on the shore. Oh, I have a cramp. Oh, I have a... There's always an excuse. You know that. Because we can tell the difference between an excuse. Excuses come in patterns. Reasons. Unforeseen or whatever. Reasons. If you're reasoning it through and saying, no, I've got here and I've changed my mind. Perfectly reasonable. Perfectly understandable. The excuses, that's about ambivalence, yeah? Our docks are, I shouldn't say anymore, they were stacked with men of ambivalence. And we seem to be quite fine with that. The problem is with ambivalence is that it absolutely drains the soul. It sucks the energy out of a person, never knowing where you stand. What the people in that mindset don't realize is that if I come up and you're sitting on that fence and I push you, oh, horrible me, push you, either way, you commit. And then you can kick your little feet up in the air and say, that wasn't me that did it. All right. But once you commit, you can adapt. And once you adapt, you make the best of the situation. And then you learn, and then you move on. Or you sit on the fence, nice and safe, while your soul is dripping out of you, while your energy, your ambition, the spark dissolves. And eventually, you sit there long enough, you become quite anxious. Do I go there? Do I go there? Am I like that? Am I like that? Keep it up until the risk is there's a greater risk. And what you find is like being here, do you need to push off the cliff? This cliff is so perilous. But the push leads you to the point where you actually discover that you can fly. You can fly. Not at first. At first, you'll soar. Not used to it. Little wings. You're not going to fly around where you want to go quite yet. You're going to soar. You're going to feel these currents. It's going to pick you up and drop you down. And then you're going to see your mates around you, and they're having a good time with it because they've been out there a little ahead of you. And they're going to say, hey, try this. It's fun. Look, we can do upside down. We can do loops. Yeah, you know, youthful enthusiasm. Masonry's always offered those ships. The docks, we knew that the men on those docks year by year, all that ambivalence, they were going to start to bicker and argue and find fault with one another. Even though we were broadcasting themes and messages that could be soothing and presenting understanding as best we could, they're rubbing shoulders and eventually continued to bump into each other and became tedious. And it became more and more irritable. And yet they were also growing older. And they seemed, you know, were they satisfied? Who the hell knows? Why would you do that to yourself? Who the hell knows? Or maybe it was the sense that every day you could go back home and say, well, you know, I'm still waiting. I'm still planning to go out on that adventure. And just getting things lined up. And after a while, people that care about you will stop asking. We'll just take it for granted. He's going out to the dock today. He'll be back. And after a while, you stop asking yourself. And eventually, the docks have become emptier and emptier. It's no fun being a bully or an idiot when there's no audience. Being irritable when somebody's looking at you like, what in the hell are you doing? Your life's too short, don't you think? Have you noticed life's going on? Moving on. Oh, and it's not waiting for you. Sorry. And those ships, they don't wait for you, do they? They keep filling up with guys that just, do you think that they overcome their fear or are they learning to live with it? That anxiety is stepping on the stage. You learn that the anxiety is uplifting. It can help you to perform at a higher level. And it's hard. But when you do it over and over again, you learn to befriend that anxiety. It's useful. And we know that. All those little hormones and what those things do to our brain. Fantastic. Hunters have known this for thousands of years. The ship keeps leaving, doesn't it? Keeps leaving. And the crowd has become toothless and old. And yet, you'll still see this tiny little man pushing his way through the irritation and saying, I'd like a chance. I'd like to step on board, please. You know that we're out there to see what's there, that's our aim. Yeah, I'm perfectly, it's taken me a long time to get here, but I'm ready. And I'd like you to see if you could consider my young friend here. He's has all kinds of energy, but he's curious too, and I think he'd be good for the travel. Well, yeah, both of you, step on board. Masonry never stops building ships. Ships of the imagination. Oh, my goodness. How does this rankle bureaucrats and bankers and insurance companies? They want to know. We're setting you off there, but only if there's profit. You know, we'll build a ship, but there has to be some profit. We can't just keep doing this without some material gain. Really? Well, those ships are full of the curious, the scientists, the poets, the historians. The artificers are with them. the people that are out there are the folks that respect the danger. The power, you respect the power. Isn't that a big part of living, is to learn to respect the power and learn what power is illusionary and manufactured and what is quite real? Well, those doors have been thrown wide open for us by this pandemic. We're connected. There is that broader context. It's amazing. The ships, we're boarding again. They leave regularly as soon as they fill up. And do they ever come back? Well, you'd have to ask the fellows on what ship. Is that what's really on your mind? You're not curious at all about what they find? Whew. Hey, we're easing into another version of another epic moment of Masonic effects. The energy of excitement is still there. It's always there. But is it foolish? No. This is where you're getting on that ship, and when you expect a thoughtful response, you get it. Nobody's going to say, don't talk to me, because I'm not like you. I don't have all the credentials, or I don't have the same experience. Don't talk to me. No. This is a place where men from all different walks of life and different backgrounds are able to respect tradition, are able to bring honor to those traditions, and respect that when they're asked a serious question, it deserves a serious answer. No more excuses. We're in this together. We're in this together. Kind of like that. Somebody should make a song about that, don't you think? Sit back and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. Imagination of a Mason. Here. This is from, this is the preface of a little book that every so often I mention on the program, called Mystic Masonry. It's very, very old little thing. The object of the author of this book is to show the relation between Freemasonry and the mysteries of antiquity. This much, at least, is implied by the title, that there is both a historical and philosophical thread uniting these departments of human thought and action is well known to every intelligent student of Masonry, no less than to all students of symbolism and mysticism. Yeah, if you were wondering, Freemasonry was predicated on the imagination and desires of intelligent people. It isn't for everybody. Because as we know, we have people that around us, those doors wide open, have exposed people that are boiling over with superstition, craving the certainty of religion. It's absolute. And faced with the probabilities of the science of Darwin and Newton, there's a comfort to it. It's not healthy, but there's a comfort to it. So easily to deny the science, and yet those folks aren't really, I think, an asset to our order. No, they may be the ambivalent stacking up on the dock. The imagination of the Mason, would you say, is the question here, would you say, as you know it, has outlined a path of insight, would you say Freemasonry, as you know it, has outlined a path of insight. In all likelihood, you might share some thoughts on the subject. Before tossing this old book into the bin, can we say we gave it our best? When we struggled to understand, did we stop in our tracks claiming it was no longer important? Our vision has been murky at best. The results seem to be telling us we gambled and lost. When we remade our experience into something with all the familiar self-affirming mediocrity, we gave up on ourselves. Transformation was not accessible. Did we make ourselves into low performers without giving ourselves the opportunity to see if all the excitement was true? Time was when getting together privately around an altar was enough stimulation. So what happened? We happened. We were similar but different than our fathers and grandfathers. We tried. We tired of what we produced. Little men declaring past lineage mattered. Soon replaced a notion of life in the moment. We watered the wine, but not our taste. Men of imagination looked into our rooms and realized they were unwelcome. They had not found nurturance, or neither did many of us. Enter conjecture. We simply made Freemasonry what we needed it to be, or so we thought. The noise of the party was so great it disturbed those who were studying, waiting and wanting inspiration, intelligent conversation, a life of sophistication beyond routine. We need not go into what happened then. To my mind, and I've discovered the minds of many, many other men, is a need to find, understand, and savor. The potential has always been there and still is. Freemasonry requires a thoughtful mind, a mind that is able to enjoy the work and make his contribution to an exchange of ideas. If that is not your situation, don't despair. Freemasons are a complex lot. Freemasonry is a challenge. Lazy thinkers might enjoy the atmosphere, but they take more than they give. Some of us have been fortunate in life in our choice of who we associate with, who we partner with. A sense of adventure, I've been quite fortunate to have found a partner. We met when we were children. That outrageous, flaming, red-headed girl, the only one in the whole school, bright, petulant, all of that. To this day, exploration has never been an impediment. Overcoming barriers, never a second thought. Not one to be maudlin or to focus on the on weakness. Oh my, no, 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 no. You're expected to pull yourself, pull your weight, pull yourself up. An insight, not just an expectation, but an insight that spoke to a capability. Sometimes ones that I didn't know I had. The question was never, why are you doing that? It's like, when are you doing it? What are you going to find? How much is it going to cost us? You know, let's see how it's going to impact, and we'll make the necessary adjustments. Huh. If only I had another 50 years with her. You know, remarkable. And her journey, being a woman, was far, far steeper than mine. She had to tolerate far more of an oppressive male politic in her career. And saddened by that, and convinced that it's my obligation to do something about that. Today I'm talking about somebody that had, talk about a poetress, a woman poetress. I don't even know if that applies anymore. Emily Bronte. One of the three weird, as they've been called, three weird, Anne, Charlotte, and Emily Bronte girls. They were so oppressed that they had to overcome. They had to publish their work. In 1846, they couldn't just declare who they were because nobody would take them seriously. Poems of Currer, Ellis, and Acton Bell. That was their work, authors of the poems. Charlotte, Emily, and Anne Bronte sold two copies. They had published the volume in hope of raising some much-needed money, but that wasn't to be. Copies were sent to well-known and successful poets, William Wordsworth, but none of them wrote back to the then-unknown siblings. Included in the volume was the following poem by Emily Bronte, no coward soul is mine. Showcases Emily's promise and elemental spirit. And it even outlines how she found that. There's different ways of, different means, I should say, to that end, to finding that courage. But hers was in a faith. A faith she had. After her death, her and like the class came along, and very strong parallels between the two writers. They both died when they were 30. Suicide in the case of Bath. No coward soul is mine. Listen to this. Listen to how she outlined the drive and very clearly, I'm not blinking. No trembler in the world's storm-troubled sphere. I see heaven's glories shine. And faith shines equal, arming me from fear. Oh God, within my breast, almighty ever-present life that in me hast rest as I undying life have power in thee. Vain are the thousand creeds that move men's hearts, unutterably vain, worthless of withering weeds or idlest froth amid the boundless main. To waken doubt in one holding so fast by thy infinity, so surely anchored on the steadfast rock of immortality. With wide embracing love, thy spirit animates eternal years, pervades and broods above, changes, stains, dissolves, creates and rears. Though earth and moon were gone and suns and universes ceased to be, and thou wert left alone, every existence would exist in thee. There is not room for death, nor Adam that his might could render void. Thou art being and breath, and what thou art may never, never be destroyed. Here is Bronte, speaker, asserting that her soul isn't afraid because her faith in heaven arms her against fear. Her relationship with the Creator is a reciprocal one. Creator has rest or welcome within her soul, and in return she gives power. The thousand creeds which most men believe are unutterably vain, with vain carrying the double meaning of both egotistical and fruitless. They are no longer the idlest froth or foam of the sea, the boundless main, short-lived, changing, inconsequential and insubstantial. Talking about fear. What really awakens one's sense of the Creator, what really strengthens one in the face of life's hardship, is not creeds or religious beliefs, but a more elemental faith or trust in gods, rather than in the tenets of organized religion. This is the very personal relationship found deeply in the core of beliefs. A personal sense of the Creator, in the penultimate stanza, put it this way: though earth and moon were gone and suns and universes ceased to be, and thou wert left alone, every existence would exist in thee. Now I can't imagine a conversation with that kind of woman. I can't imagine trying to exercise the old boyish charm or play fool around her. Can you? She's a serious thinker. And what's the deal? My goodness, being around somebody like that brings out the serious thinker in you. I thought perhaps Masonry did that too. Oh. Just a little Eddie Higgins trio to help you with that thought. Imagine I just want to refill my glass of wine. Right about now I miss a cigarette. Oh my goodness. Just to before the days when I knew that cancer would kill me or that it looked ridiculous smoking a cigarette. You and I could have a cigarette and a glass of wine, relax. You know, bad thought. Old man's meandering, silly. But the music, huh? What does it do? I can imagine, you know, you sit there and you're with some good company and you're talking and you're leaning in, and then this beautiful music just starts off in the background. You've been there. And then it's just overwhelmed. It fills in the moments in between. And then one by one, you turn your head. And it's not that you're separating, it's that you're coming together. The music is drawing you together. And that's a good night. And what will we have? Well, let's see. Will I have the steak or the fish? Maybe the steak. I like it done in olive oil, you know. Anyway. I don't know if we think, you know, for a moment, we're ever allowed to think that masonry is going to be easy, or that it's going to be, that over that horizon, you're going to find utopia. We've seen those experiments, and we've seen what the Agora does to those noble ideas. You know, there's little distinction. It's reaction. It's emotional thought. That's bad, so anything that comes of it must be bad. And if you tell me that you're the hero and you have an authority, then you must be the hero. Damn those smartphones, eh? The damn things are rewriting history, because we can check the facts right away. Oh, that's bad. That's all bad. Brilliant. It's brilliant. Instead, there's still, you know, that vagueness, but there is this certainty. Oh, it's wonderful. And the young people that have come up exposed to that look at us with this element of conjecture, thinking, what in the hell have you been doing? And you want to be mentoring me? Is it any wonder that they're raising an eyebrow and walking away? No, of course not. Of course not. We find that if we're being intelligent about life, we can examine the anxieties and the fears and the foibles for what they are. They don't necessarily grip us. We can talk about an idea without being convinced of the idea. We can actually hold, who was it that said that? You tell me. Opposing thoughts in our mind at the same time was a sign of intelligence. We can do that. Even though we'll have an audience of people pointing fingers. If you think it, you must believe it. It stratifies. It separates us, huh? It separates us from the people that are led by emotion. Their decisions are fraught. And there's more emotion. What went wrong? That constant disappointment. Because your field of view is always so reactive. If it makes me feel good, it must be right. And then somebody is whispering to you, but me. What if you reason through? Have you thought about reasoning through these things a bit? Reason? Have you thought about checking out the facts, so you know the details a little bit? And at least in your mind, is there some consistency? You mean apply logic? What's that? That's too big a word. We run up against this when we're looking at the history we've been talking about. I don't know why it seems so satisfying to end this program with a passage on history, but it sort of adds an element of completion, I think. British utopians we had that sense that, you know, there was so much power out there, and it was in, and we were part of the winning side, you know. Anything we did was, whether it was corrupt or not, was right. And then it was in a British context. We didn't exist. My goodness, my country didn't exist until we fought and did something at Vimy Ridge that other armies couldn't do. And then we looked up, the survivors looked up, and we who were left behind looked at them and said, right, Canada, got it. No utopianism, but it came in tandem with an underlying concern for decadence and corruption. Oh, that imperialism, don't think there weren't detractors saying, look at the decadence. Now, when you think about that, fast forward to what's going on today, decadence, people mocking us. Yes, I'm decadent, and I'm mocking you because you're not. What's wrong with you? And corruption, it was there then. So take off the rose-colored glasses is what history is teaching us. This is 18th century stuff. It gave us many versions of an ancient regime and many forms of social privilege and exclusive access to political power, besides those we associate with absolutism on the continent. Concern about corruption and the tyranny associated with it expressed itself in Britain through the politics and philosophy of government, known as the country opposition. Juxtaposed against the largely Whig oligarchy, the court, which controlled the offices of government, opposition sentiment could turn up in the politics of either party, Tories or Whigs. But increasingly, after the Hanoverian succession in 1714, the rhetoric of the country belonged to segments of the Tory party. The ideological roots of the country lie, however, not in the Toryism of the late 17th century, but in the republicanism of the mid-century English Revolution. The point about the country was not its party affiliations, which could shift, but rather, given its origins, its potential radicalism. Increasingly, the view from the country claimed to represent lesser men, not the great landed gentry, not their placemen in the sinews of government employment. It became the voice of small merchants, shopkeepers, and even artisans. They openly attacked what they described as the corruption of oligarchic ministers who had become, by approbation, the actual heirs of the liberties and privileges believed to be confined by the revolution settlement, by the defeat of absolutism and arbitrary government of 1689. In the 1690s, this country opposition percolated on the fringes of the Whig Party. Its most representative exponents, politicians and forethinkers, like John Toland and Anthony Collins, saw themselves as the heirs of the Commonwealth tradition, or the mid-century republicanism of James Harrington or John Milton. By the 1760s, the country opposition had come to mean angry crowds and tumultuous assemblies in support of the radical parliamentarian John Wilkes. Once again, radicalism surfaced in British politics, and although its public face was Whig, some of its proponents could once have been country Tories. Tensions. Eh? We're not immune. We're not immune. We pull back. Thank you. Well, there you have it. The takeaways, maybe, hopefully, is that we don't make the world a simpler place. It's complex, fascinating. We don't quake in our boots. We anticipate that change is the constant. Somebody preaching at us that change is bad, what in the hell were they thinking? As if not change is somehow a benefit. I think they're breathing a different kind of air than the rest of us. Oh, the idea here is that an intelligent mind has an advantage. We know that intelligence it correlates well with longevity, with living healthy. Be intelligent about your life. Be aware of your thoughts. And if you find solace in an idea, explore it. We may not be able to transfer that same level of contentment because of the nuanced part. There's a subtext to contentment, but enjoy it in its fullness because your sense of fulfillment will be a positive influence on everybody around you. And it may piss people like me off. Why is that guy so happy? Why is he so content? Why does his life seem so meaningful? Well, those people that have been setting off on those ships have been coming back with that attitude for a long time, and it's leaving those ambivalent little sods on the shore wondering, maybe I should just jump on board. Well, got to be a little more than maybe. Just commit, for goodness sakes. Get off the fence. Thanks for joining and putting up with the endless mayhem, the endless joy and the possibilities brought to us by this very unusual order, Freemasonry. Amazing. I look forward to being with you again. Thank you. The audience now has grown. We have an audience in Germany. Thank you very, very much. It's a pleasure to have you sitting in Denmark. Nice work. And Croatia and Greece and Serbia and Spain and Ireland and Japan and India and Peru and Argentina. Yeah.